From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, the Trump administration released the names of more than 650,000 employers that received emergency aid under the Small Business Association's Paycheck Protection Program. Among those on the list, 40 of Planned Parenthood's affiliates, which violates the law passed by Congress. Will the nation's largest abortion provider be held to account? We'll be joined by North Carolina Congressman Dan Bishop, a member of the House Small Business Committee. And just prior to the 4th of July, the state of Virginia ordered an American flag removed from a Capitol construction site in Richmond. Why was the American flag removed? Virginia Delegate Todd Gilbert is here to explain. Also, prior to Congress breaking for the 4th of July, there was a rare moment of bipartisanship within the ranks of the House as 39 Democratic members joined with Republicans to send a $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill back to committee to amend the measure to limit China's access to American infrastructure programs. Bob Fu, founder of China Aid and senior fellow for international religious freedom here at the Family Research Council, is here to tell us why that is important. And finally, with flags, monuments, and statues being burned, torn down, or removed by weak and fearful mayors and governors, how should we respond? I'm going to talk about it with David Clawson, director of FRC's Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, later on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler or Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, earlier today, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who is chairman of the Senate Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship, called upon Attorney General William Barr to conduct an immediate review into Planned Parenthood's unlawful participation in the Paycheck Protection Program, which was a part of the coronavirus relief measure. Rubio, who was joined by 94 members of the House of Representatives, said, quote, "There is no ambiguity in the legislation that passed or public record around its passage that organizations such as Planned Parenthood, whose parent organization has close to $500 million in assets, is not eligible for the Paycheck Protection Program," end quote. The request came after yesterday's revelation that nearly 40 affiliates of Planned Parenthood collectively received $80 million. Joining now to talk more about this is Congressman Dan Bishop, who represents the 9th Congressional District of North Carolina. He is also a member of the House Small Business Committee and joined Senator Rubio in the letter to the Attorney General. Congressman Bishop, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for the opportunity. I'm glad to be with you.
You signed this letter along with Senator Rubio to the Attorney General. Why is this happening? I mean, how in the world, when the legislation was so clear, did Planned Parenthood end up with $80 million?
It is disheartening. It is outrageous. And I agree with what Senator Rubio has said. I joined the letter. There is no argument whatsoever that has any substance to it that these are independent entities. The affiliation rules under the small business program, the Paycheck Protection Program, and the SBA 7A program that was used to implement that, precludes an entity like nonprofit entities. Planned Parenthood Federation of America has about 16,000 nationwide employees, and again the affiliation rules take these independent or these separate affiliates and treat them as one entity. So there's not a good faith argument in my view, and in the view of the others, the experts who drafted the legislation, that they would be able to do this. So they simply have engaged in a violation of the law.
Well, our team, our government affairs team, was involved in the drafting of the legislation, both with the White House and with members of Congress in terms of the relief effort, making sure that nonprofits were involved that were required to shut down as a result of the government shutdown. But it was very clear that there was intentionality in precluding organizations like Planned Parenthood, as you said, 16,000 employees. That's not a small business. So somewhere there was a breakdown in the Now, I understand that their application could have reflected mistruth. I'll be kind. But the administration, the SBA, should have been more vigilant and diligent in approving these applications.
One thing that Senator Rubio said that I thought was a very cogent comment is that whoever has assisted in the improper origination of these forgivable PPP loans in violation of the affiliation rules, even if it's someone at SBA, will have to be held to account. And the Trump Justice Department is going to have to get after that. And so we've made that point. When Administrator Carranza comes before the Small Business Committee the next occasion, I can guarantee you that I and other Republican members will be asking some very difficult questions of her.
Yeah, and I understand completely that you're at the mercy of the Democratic majority in terms of when and if they will schedule such a hearing. But certainly I would think that Senator Rubio, who immediately jumped upon on this and has been discussing it, as you have, when the revelations were first made, that I would hope that some answers would be forthcoming pretty soon, both from SBA and from, obviously, the Attorney General.
One way or the other, Tony, I think we'll get an opportunity to get to the bottom of it soon. SBA, of course, has demanded the return of the money and has now taken the position that they clearly were precluded from participating in the program. So we'll see what happens. I know a bunch of your listeners will say, well, why didn't you do something to make it clearer? And folks would need to understand in that situation. And as you said, you all were involved, but you were talking about a program in the middle of the COVID pandemic designed to keep small businesses afloat.
Right.
And something that moved pretty quickly, but that really didn't leave any uncertainty here. It should not have happened.
Well, legislation has to be crafted in such a way that it is not selective in who is. I mean, it has to be precisely worded, and I know that's
right.
You can't just put
it's
in there.
Got to be a neutral principle.
Right. You can't just put in there that Planned Parenthood can't receive the funds. You have to have categories of organizations. And the point here being that this is not a small business. This is a massive operation, the nation's largest abortion provider. And, you know, kind of like a terrorist organization, they have cells. And so they have affiliates. And I mean, that's how they operate. And so, but collectively, I mean, think about this for a moment. And I mean, I know you do, so this is kind of a rhetorical statement. But they receive $500 million a year in taxpayer money. Planned Parenthood does, both in federal, state, and local. And as is pointed out in the letter by Senator Rubio, they are sitting on millions of dollars. Why do they need to be getting these emergency funds?
Well, and particularly when you consider that that's the reason, as you said, the affiliation rules aren't designed for Planned Parenthood. It simply applies to them because they're this massive organization.
And to that point, Congressman, I hate to cut you off, but to that point, yeah. Other entities that initially applied for it and then realized that they didn't meet the criteria because of their affiliation, because they have multiple affiliates, they withdrew from the program.
And those, Tony, were frankly far more arguable cases. Some large restaurant operating businesses and the like Shake Shack and I forget the name of the steakhouse. Won't come to me. But those organizations, there was some argument about their situation that was a closer call than this one. This just seems like it's blatantly abusive, and it will need to be rectified.
Well, I think in part Planned Parenthood has a permanent position at the trough, and so they just assume that any time that there is government money to be had, they're going to be first in line to get it. And again, there was a lot of energy put into this legislation. I know it moved faster than anything Congress has ever done before that I can recall. But a lot of energy was focused on this one issue. So I think, as the senator said, it's there's no ambiguity in terms of whether or not they qualified for this program.
Yeah, but it's very disheartening. You see that number. I mean, it's just stunning to me. $80 million into the hands of abortionists through this program is one of several reasons we've had to be disheartened of late. So it's I'm torn up about it.
Well, Congressman, before I let you go, what else is on the horizon as we look at the response to the coronavirus? I mean, we're still in the midst of this, kind of a second wave coming forward, some say. Of course, the media, I always take everything they say with a grain of salt. Anything they can do to make this administration look bad, they will. But what's on the horizon? What should our listeners be looking for?
Well, one other issue on the subject of life is there have been those seeking to weaken the protections of women against the derelict prescribing, dangerous prescribing of abortifacients, and that's something I've been participating in trying to work against as well. More generally, as coronavirus continues, I think now Senator McConnell is moving toward another bill. And of course, we've seen a lot of Democrat messaging bills that have come that have been passed on the floor, really not expecting to become law. But the pieces are beginning to come together on a further bill. It's probably too early to say much about it, except that I think we'll be giving attention to issue of business liabilities, to addressing working capital needs and the like. So much more work to happen, and I do think we're starting to see that on the horizon, whereas before it's been just sort of an indefinite waiting period.
Yeah, and I think people are beginning to realize that this is not going to be over quickly, that this is going to alter the way we conduct business until we get a good, firm handle on the virus with a vaccine and get it contained. You know, it's going to, as you said, the liability aspect expose businesses, nonprofits, to the trial lawyers who would love to sue over anything. And so there's a lot of work still to be done. Hopefully more thought and precision will go into the execution of these policies in the days ahead.
Yeah, I hope so, too, Tony. It's been a pleasure to be with you to discuss it and look forward to continuing to work with you guys. We got a lot to do.
All right, Congressman, appreciate your leadership on the issues that we care so much about. Congressman Dan Bishop of North Carolina represents the 9th Congressional District and one of the True Blue members of Congress. All right, when we come back, prior to the 4th of July, there was a flag that contractors put, a large American flag, put on a construction site. It happened to be office space being built for Virginia lawmakers. And they were ordered to take it down. Yes, that's right. Before the 4th of July, celebrating our nation's independence, the 244th anniversary of our Declaration of Independence, they were ordered to take the flag down. Why? Well, we're going to talk about it with a House delegate from Virginia, Todd Gilbert. Right after this, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come in just a moment. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership and Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler, it's at T Perkins. All right, prior to the 4th of July, Virginia officials ordered the removal of a large American flag from a construction site. Now, the flag put up by a contractor celebrating America's freedom. I mean, Virginia obviously factoring pretty important into America's founding, but they were ordered to take it down. Why? Well, joining me now with the answer is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, former Majority Leader Todd Gilbert. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. Sorry it has to be on a topic as infuriating as this one.
Well, I really think people need to pay attention to Virginia. And what has happened in Virginia in the last couple of years. I mean, it's gone from, it's always been kind of on the bubble because of the influence of the D.C. area. But, I mean, you just enacted, or I shouldn't say you, the state of Virginia under the governor, enacted some pretty far-reaching legislation, gun control, turning back a lot of the pro-life legislation that you and others had successfully fought to put in place. But this is what really grabbed my attention, the removal of an American flag. Tell our listeners why it was taken down.
Yeah, and this was a large American flag that had been constructed out of and had been constructed out of tarps. And it was just glorious. It was huge. It was beautiful. And you would never have known it was constructed out of tarps. That's how the care that was taken to put this together by a subcontractor. And it was hung on the side, not just of any building, but it was hung on the side of the new construction of the legislative office buildings for the legislature of Virginia. So this was not just any random building. This was the seat of government authority, in Richmond, in the state capitol. And the governor's office, somebody in his administration, and we're still trying to get a handle on who, whether it was the governor himself or someone else, made the decision that that flag represented a target for the protests and the protesters that we've been seeing tearing up the streets and businesses of Richmond on a nightly basis for the last few weeks. And so somebody in the administration said that's a target for those protesters and we have to take it down and hide it. rather than standing up for it being a symbol of everything that unites us as a people, we capitulated to the anti-American left and took down Old Glory.
Did the governor put a white flag up in its place?
Had not thought of that, but that probably was a good would have been a good retort. But no, he did essentially surrender to the mob, and the mob has been running the streets of Richmond for some time now, and they've been making demands and getting their way. And this was this is the saddest part of that chapter, even though it was purely symbolic. Everything it represents symbolically is very troubling. Again, that this last remaining symbol of everything that unifies us as a people was taken down.
Well, Todd, I would have to think as a delegate there in the House of Delegates in Virginia, and you've served in leadership role there. I actually years ago I spoke there at the House of Delegates for a piece of legislation that they were entertaining that I had passed in Louisiana, and it was awesome for me just to stand in that place in the history that Virginia has, that place in history that Virginia has occupied in our nation. I mean, it wasn't just another state, you know, it was a colony and it was a leading colony. I would have to think that a lot of people in Virginia are grieved over the direction and the capitulation of your present governor.
So much so. And I think, frankly, the degree to which even Democrats in Virginia are willing to give in to the outwardly, openly anti-American left within their party, I think they misunderstand truly where most Americans are on these symbols, upon our freedoms, everything that makes us great, everything that made us the greatest country with the most prosperous people on the face of the earth. And it's not even close, the freest, most prosperous people in history. I think most people still embrace that. And I pray that is the truth, and that I'm not missing something. And even though anti-American sentiment is growing, even in our own country, among the anti-American left, and their size and their voice is growing, I would hope that at the end of the day, this is a huge miscalculation by the governor and his ilk, that people are going to embrace this sort of thing going forward.
I tend to agree with you. I think you're right. I do think this is an overreach. But I would also add to this, Todd, and I think you can probably speak to this in the few moments we have left, is that complacency of those who care about this country and love this country, but yet just kind of are on the sidelines, that allows this to happen. This
absolutely.
I mean, Virginia is a case study in what happens when citizens are complacent about their state.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, we had a robust supermajority here just a few years ago in the legislature, in the House of Delegates. And I did serve as majority leader, and now I am the minority leader because of the shifting political winds here in Virginia. And Virginia is a bellwether for the rest of the country, and I think it should be instructive to people all across the country that if they, whatever their values are, if they are godly values, if they are American values, if they are just, you know, freedom, there are forces on the march that really hate those ideals. Everything about, you know, the essence of what people think the world is about and their worldview, they hate those things, and they are coming for them in every form. And unless people are willing to get up and change the way they do business and get engaged as citizens, I'm afraid all may be lost. So we still have a chance, Tony, but this was instructive.
Yeah, it's all hands on deck. Delegate Todd Gilbert, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for continuing the fight there in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Having me today.
All right. I mean, look, folks, the left will fill a void. And that's what's happening. As we're preoccupied with certain things, they come in, and this is a minority. It's a vocal, and I would say in some cases vicious minority. We have to stand up against this. And I'm going to talk more about that later. But coming up next, we're going to be joined by Bob Fu talking about what's happening in China. That's next. Don't go away.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Not so long ago, sex education in public schools involved learning about human growth and development and listening to advice on how to be careful, respect others, and save sex for marriage. Things are very different today. Parents have two main concerns about sex ed: that it sexualizes children and that it's loaded with LGBTQ indoctrination. Family Research Council has released a new resource to address this issue titled Sex Education in Public Schools: Sexualization of Children and LGBT Indoctrination. This resource reveals troubling examples of the agenda-driven content being pushed in modern sex ed and exposes the powerful organizations behind it all. Finally, it offers some action steps for parents to consider in their fight to protect the health and innocence of their children. For more information about sex education in public schools and to view this resource, visit frc.org/sexeducation. That's frc.org/sexeducation.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, last week, interesting thing happened. For the seventh time, rank-and-file Democrats betrayed Nancy Pelosi and joined with Republicans in a motion to recommit. Now, it's a kind of a technical term, but what happens, because there's not an open process in the House to amend legislation, basically, the majority just, you know, runs it all through. And the Republicans were a little better, but still, that was one of the complaints that many of the Republicans had about previous leadership, is that they drove these things through without allowing amendments. Now, of course, that can become unwieldy when that occurs, but it is the process. So in the absence of that, there's a called a motion to recommit. That means the bill is sent back to committee, where amendments are then considered. And so last week, before the House adjourned, the Democrats were pushing forward a $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill. When Republicans stepped forward, in fact, it was Congressman Rick Crawford of Arkansas, introduced a motion to recommit, which would limit China's access to American infrastructure programs if the Chinese state-owned or operated enterprises or Chinese companies which helped construct Uyghur concentration camps. So tying it back to human rights. And so 39 Democrats joined with the Republicans and sent this back to committee. Now, why is this important? Joining me now to talk more about this is Bob Fu. He is the president and founder of China Aid Association. Also, he is now a senior fellow at the Family Research Council for International Religious Freedom. Bob, welcome back to the program. Bob, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead. So why is this an important development?
Well, this is a very critical, important development because, the Chinese Communist Party really posed the most existential threat to the free world, certainly to America, as the former speaker Newt Gingrich indicated in his book. And we have seen, not only the Chinese Communist Party has persecuting all kinds of religious minorities. You mentioned about the Uyghur Muslims, the Tibetan Buddhists, the underground Catholics, the Protestant house churches, and as many as 2 million Uyghurs are in the modern concentration camps. But most horribly, we Americans allow the Chinese Communist Party and its companies in the Wall Street basically raising as much as $3 trillion in the past decade to fund its programs to develop nuclear weapons and military research to kill us. I mean, the Pentagon identified 20 large corporations, including Huawei and ZTE, and unfortunately, many American politicians even were employed to defend and to support them. But they are Chinese military or military-affiliated companies. And, unfortunately, with the help of then-Vice President Biden in 2013, the SEC and the U.S. regulators signed MOU with the Chinese version of SEC and their Treasury Department, giving the Chinese accounting firms registered in Wall Street exemption from providing material evidence when they are found engaging fraudulent activities. I mean, you're sure that these Chinese companies are every day engaging the cover up and cooking up, books. And this horrendous coronavirus, the Wuhan virus, the China virus, the Communist Party virus, whatever you want to call it, is a direct result of this pattern of lies and the cover-up and inflicting, the global community with more than 180 nations. I mean, we are losing how many lives? Over 130,000 lives because of this. How can we continue to do this? I think this amendment is timely. We need to cut off their Communist Party's funding from our own pocket.
Yeah, and what most people don't realize is the expansion of China into the United States in doing these infrastructure projects, toll roads and different things. I mean, why would we be giving them money that they can then turn around and use to develop, as you pointed out, weapons and technologies against us? To me, it's insane. Bob Fu, thanks so much for joining us today, and welcome aboard to the Family Research Council as a senior fellow.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Bob Fu, senior fellow for international religious freedom here at the Family Research Council and president of the China Aid Association. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk more about what it means in taking down the flag, surrendering in Virginia. We need to discern the times. We're going to talk about that next when we return on this edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. You don't want to miss what's coming up.
Could you use some timely and original commentary to read this summer, specifically on the issues facing our culture today? FRCblog.com has just what you're looking for. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, members of the Family Research Council team, as well as outside contributors. You can learn about religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Check out this list of a few of our most recent titles. What Does It Mean to Be a Woman? DC Christians Take to the Streets to Sing, Lament, and Pray, and Prayerfully Responding to Civil Unrest. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and stand for truth. Our blog helps you do just that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com. On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Churches should begin putting in place plans to reopen and operate their ministries according to the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control as state officials begin lifting orders. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House three-phase plan and how it relates to in-person church meetings and gatherings. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. Our resource offers practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. There, you'll also find our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus. Again, that's frc.org/churchguidelines.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com.
It is time for our politicians to summon the bravery and determination of our American ancestors. It is time. It is time to plant our flag and to protect the greatest of this nation for citizens of every race, in every city, and every part of this glorious land. For the sake of our honor, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our union, we must protect and preserve our history, our heritage, and our great heroes.
That was President Donald Trump last Friday night speaking at the base of Mount Rushmore, which bears the images of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt. I've been there. In fact, I had the privilege of speaking at the very same location for a National Day of Prayer event several years ago. It is an impressive and inspiring setting. In my view, a very appropriate place for President Trump's speech, which was both a pledge and a challenge to the nation. The significance and the brilliance of the speech was made evident by the liberal media's visceral reaction of hatred, calling the speech dark, divisive, traitorous, combative, and racist. No doubt many of them would have preferred the president stand in front of George Washington, the father of our nation, and wave a white flag declaring the great experiment in self-government is over. So what are we to make of the lawlessness, the violence, the division that is shaking our nation? Well, in January, FRC began a 2-year journey through the Bible. If you're on the journey with us, I'm pretty confident you're being blessed and encouraged in the midst of the lawlessness that is enveloping many cities in our country. If you're not, it's a great time to start. You can download the reading plan by going to TonyPerkins.com. But one of the passages we recently read is 1 Chronicles, chapter 12. It is a roll call of the tribes, which includes a census. These lists can be pretty monotonous, but hidden in some of the verses are little nuggets. In verse 32 is one of them. It contains a brief but insightful descriptor of the sons of Issachar, said, who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. It's essential to understand what's going on. You know, many people, including many Christians, are distracted either willfully or unintentionally by the entertainment and the amusements of today and do not understand what is unfolding at this moment in which we live. Others are paying attention. In fact, some have become addicted to the 24/7 cable news cycle and as a result are fearful, they're anxious, and some are even angry. But what set the sons of Issachar apart is they both understood the times and knew how to respond and what to do. As followers of Jesus, we should be paying attention, and we should also know how to respond. Now, last week, about the same time President Trump was preparing to go to Mount Rushmore to send a message to the nation that our history and our heroes would be protected from the lawless mobs, as we talked about earlier, the leaders of Virginia took a different approach. According to the USA Today, state officials in Virginia ordered the removal of a large American flag from a construction site ahead of the 4th of July, calling it a potential target for those protesting racial injustice and police brutality. Dina Potter, a spokeswoman for the Virginia State Department of General Services, said officials asked a contractor to take down the flag from a new office building for state lawmakers under construction in Richmond. Quote, "Over the past month, we've seen buildings and structures around Capitol Square vandalized and flags, dumpsters, a bus, and other items set ablaze during demonstrations around the city," end quote. Well, isn't that exactly what protesters want? For the majority of Americans to be intimidated, to shrink back in fear and silence? I thank God that that was not the attitude of those associated with another flag flying in Virginia. The flag I'm referring to flies at Arlington, Virginia, at the Marine Memorial. The iconic image of the flag raising on Mount Suribachi at the Battle of Iwo Jima, one of the major battles in the Pacific, lasting 36 days and resulting in 26,000 Americans killed or wounded. More medals of honor were awarded to Marines and sailors in the Battle of Iwo Jima than any other battle in American history. The capstone of that victory was captured in the Pulitzer Prize-winning image that Joe Rosenthal captured of five Marines and a Navy corpsman raising the American flag on the 545-foot summit. By the way, three of those men were killed later as the battle continued. The image of the men struggling to raise the flag has become synonymous with the Marine Corps and with valor and courage. In fact, Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz, who was there, reflected on the Marines' incredible sacrifice who fought at Iwo Jima by saying uncommon valor was a common virtue. And 76 years later, elected officials take down the American flag on American soil because they are afraid it might incite lawless behavior. Now, I could unload on these spineless cowards who want to coddle lawless thugs while surrendering the freedoms men have given their lives freely to procure and protect. But that would only be dealing with the symptom. We have to go beyond the symptom to the source. Now, I began by referring to the sons of Issachar, understanding the times and knowing what to do. Recall the instructions God gave to Israel as they were going into the land of promise. God put before them a blessing or a curse. A blessing if they obeyed him and a curse if they chose to disobey. A portion of that blessing we read in Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 25. Quote, "No man shall be able to stand against you. The Lord your God will put the dread of you and the fear of you upon all the land where you tread, just as he has said to you," end quote. Now, the flip side was the curse, which brought fear upon the children of Israel, not fear of them. Instead of others fleeing in the face of Israel, Israel would flee in fear. In other words, and in fact, it talks about this in Leviticus chapter 26, verse 36, "And as for those of you who are left," that is, those who were not taken captive, "I will send faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies. The sound of a shaken leaf shall cause them to flee. They shall flee as though fleeing from a sword, and they shall fall when no one pursues." In other words, you fear or reverence God and his word or others, or you will fear others. You refuse to fear God, you will fear man. America has a God problem. We no longer fear God. We have kicked God, His Word, His commandments out of our schools, our courtrooms, and out of our culture. And what has not been rejected outright is openly mocked with disdain. Mayors and cities retreat from thugs and lawless punks. Why? Because they have no foundations to stand upon, as truth has been rejected. And they have no courage because there is no fear of God in their hearts or lives. Now, some might say, well, that's awful judgmental. Faith is a personal matter that should be kept private. Really? I think that's the problem. Because where does the scripture say that? Jesus said, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." I think that's the problem. The light has been hidden. Christians have allowed the light of the gospel, the light of the truth to be hidden, to be obscured because some are offended by it. What must we do? We must pray as Nehemiah did, that God would forgive us of our rejection of His word and His ways. And we must pray as the disciples did for the courage and the boldness to face the cancel culture of our day and to proclaim the gospel truth. It is time for followers of Jesus to raise the light of the gospel. It is time to restore the truth in our nation again. It is time. The future of our country depends upon it. Joining me now with more on this topic and how we should be responding in this day is David Clawson, Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
David, many are shrinking back in the face of the hostility and of this cancel culture. But that's exactly what those who would want to remake America would have us do. And that would also require that we hide the gospel in our lives, our words, and our actions. And that's just something we cannot do.
It's something we absolutely cannot do, Tony. And I really appreciate just listening to the words that you just said, pointing to some of the deeper issues really at the heart of what's going on in our culture. And I think you're right on point. You know, last Friday, I watched President's speech, the July 3rd speech at Mount Rushmore. I thought it was one of his best. In fact, if anyone listening to us right now on Washington Watch hasn't listened to the speech, I think it's really worth an hour of everyone's time because, you know, really the president, what he did is he just reminded us of what makes this nation exceptional, talking about the founding generation, the ideals that animated them. And I think he's right. You know, although we haven't always lived up to those founding ideals, you know, we've made incredible strides. And our nation today is the most free and prosperous nation in the world because of that. But instead of acknowledging the themes that unite us as Americans, which the president highlighted in the speech, you know, the media and liberal politicians have gone after it, describing it as dark and, you know, alleging that it's filled with dog whistles to white supremacy. And I think this – and you pointed at this, Tony. This is getting the reaction that we're seeing, the backlash, the strong backlash we're seeing from the media. This is a symptom of a deeper movement that's at work in this country, one that we need as Christians especially to be the men of Issachar, to understand what's going on, to understand what's behind this movement, and to be able to speak truth to exactly what's going on.
I mean – this is where you're right. I mean, this is where Christians need to be alert, awake, knowing what's happening. I mean, I think the media is like, I mean, they're like wolves in wool suits. I mean, they want to say they're for the people, but they are undermining this country. They are against the values that we as Christians hold, and quite frankly, the values and the principles that America was built upon. And if we avoid the – and I know this is the tendency, the default of Christians, I would put myself in this category as well, is to avoid controversy because we associate controversy with things that are wrong. But if you read the New Testament, controversy surrounded Jesus. Controversy surrounded his disciples. I mean, controversy was a way of life for those who followed Jesus.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think it's important, Tony, for us to be really clear. You know, there are conversations right now, and the left will say, you know, well, the conversations that are taking place is about Black Lives Matter and about race relations in this country. And of course, that there are important conversations taking place, and Christians need to be active participants in those. But I think you are being really keen right here to notice that there is an effort going on right now, one that I think is actually hijacking the movement for racial equality, which is to undermine and cast doubt on the American project as we know it. And I think what we've seen, you and I have talked about this on the show, the evidence is around us, because, you know, it's not just the statues to Confederate generals that are being pulled down. It's statues to America's founders, statues to Union leaders such as General Grant and President Lincoln, statues to abolitionists like Frederick Douglass. All of these are being pulled down. And yet the left and these left politicians, including Senator Duckworth of Illinois, you know, she referred to the speeches that President Trump spent all his time talking about dead traitors. It just shows that the focus is on something that's completely not what the president and not what you or I are trying to talk about here. And that's something that as Christians we need to be calling out and making sure people are paying attention to what's going on.
You are absolutely correct in what you said, that America is not perfect. We never have been and unfortunately never will be. But we were built upon principles that are transcendent truths. And the closer we align ourselves with those, the closer we move toward that more perfect union. In fact, that's the history of America. We have been moving in a trajectory that is moving us to a more equal and where inequality has been done away with, and there's more freedom, and there is, I mean, we're experiencing, you know, to a much bigger, larger degree than any people on the face of the earth have ever experienced. But they're undermining the very foundation by attacking the history. I mean, think about this. What we just had, the last administration, was an African-American as president of the United States. How can you not say we are making progress toward greater equality?
Yeah, that's right, Tony. And I would just say, you know, equating patriotism with white supremacy is not only ludicrous, which is what we're seeing the reaction to this speech. It's dangerous. And it really shows the hostility toward the values and ideals that have long held this country together. And as Christians, we should be especially alarmed, obviously, since many of the values that our country was founded on, such as the notion that all men are created equal, endowed with their creator with unalienable rights, that's rooted in a biblical worldview. And that is what is in the scope of those who are trying to take this country down.
Yes, absolutely right. David Clawson, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, thank you for joining me as well. Great to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Let me again remind you of the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins, or Parler at T Perkins. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.